Some Sundays when my time comes, I just want to keep sitting down there by Rick and just sit there. If you say that the music was particularly good today, does that mean it's not good every week? I hope not. It just means maybe what's going on in my life and in my own spirit was struck in a unique way by something that happened today. And music was good today. It's always good, but for me, in a different way today. So, I don't know if how many of you guys are online and you've come across this satirical blog site called the Babylon Bee. Anybody familiar with Babylon Bee? It's kind of like The Onion, which is another online blog that writes fake satirical news articles. And the Babylon Bee does this from a deep inside the church world perspective. It's very Christianese, very, you know, church-inclusive language. And it's very snarky, very cynical, which is why I love it so much. But there was a blog posted or a fake news story posted. And they're always, you know, one-liners, headlines, and then a little story. But it said, a man prays to receive a word from the Lord while sitting 3 feet away from his Bible. Prays for a word from the Lord while sitting 3 feet away from his Bible. And it's very tongue-in-cheek, but it acknowledges that we're always looking for God to speak to us, to give us direction, to give us ideas, to point us in one way or the other. And yet, man, God has provided us with his word that is full of advice and direction and pictures of himself and ideas of who he wants us to be. It's just, that's hard work. So hard work, isn't it, to pick up your Bible and read and to study it and to make it a part of your life and to work on listening for God's Spirit through his Word. We just would rather just kind of close our eyes and ask God to speak to us and him just kind of open up the heavens and in the voice of Charlton Heston perhaps tell us exactly what we want to hear or what we want to know. That's so much easier. But we are a push-button society. You know, it didn't used to be that you could just push buttons on your microwave and have lunch, or that you could push buttons on your remote control and have TV or have channels change. We've become a society that wants to push a button and have a smoothie, or push a button and, you know, have an answer to whatever question we want, or push a button and say, I can't tell you how many times it comes up in conversation. We want to know, you know, a trivial detail, whereas used to you just have to wonder, and now I push the button on my phone and I say, Siri, tell me how old James Taylor is. And she tells me. It's amazing. We've become a push-button society, and in our listening for the voice of God, sometimes we want prayers to work the same way. Push a button, God, tell me what I need to hear. And it doesn't necessarily work that way. It's fostering the discipline, the habit of listening to God through his word. And so in the context of our worship services, all of this is constructed to give you an opportunity to commune with God through praise, through singing, through prayer, through fellowship of other believers, and of course through considering his word. And so I hope, I've shared this with you before, but for those of you that may be new or may be visiting, I hope that you will listen not so much to me as through me, and perhaps consider what the Spirit of God may be wanting to share with you today, because it'll be different for all 600, 700 of you. It'll be different. Only God's Spirit can speak uniquely to you. But he uses his word to do that. This series and these conversations we've been having are of a more topical variety, which is different than the norm here, but we do kind of wade into those from time to time. We wanted to do something that was family-related here as we wrap up the school year, remind you that family is good after a year of school and maybe being at each other's throats and you're ready for summer break. Family is good. We wanted to enrich family, but not just your nuclear family, but also church family, and family, the broadest definition that you can give it, you know, your friends, coworkers, people that are a part of your life, and talk about how So many of these areas of life warrant consideration as balance. That in our society of excess, sometimes the greatest challenges we have are not choosing between something bad and something good, but it's choosing between two things that are good and getting one out of balance and one absent from our life. And so that is the idea in these conversations. We're using the book of Proverbs as just kind of a thought-provoking catalyst. And so that's where we'll be again today as we consider the subject of communication and speech. You know, the book of Proverbs probably has more to say about words and speech and communication than it does any other single subject. It does talk about wisdom. Obviously, it's a book of wisdom, and so it talks about wisdom and folly a lot, but it talks, I mean, if you were just to pick one very specific subject, it talks about communication more than anything else. I just did a quick rundown of topics related to communication off the top of my head, and this is not even exhaustive, but you can flip throughout Proverbs and you will find multiple references to lying or truth-telling. You'll find references to correcting, rebuking perhaps, to deception, to flattery, boasting, discretion. We're going to see a couple of those today. Being careful, the economy of words. Sometimes we don't need to say the first thing that comes into our mind. It's funny, in our society, people wear that like a badge of honor. Well, you know, I just tell you what I think. I just say what comes to my mind as though that's a good thing. Sometimes it's not a good thing. Proverbs would agree with me on this. Sometimes discretion is the course of wisdom. Wise counsel, it has a lot to say about gossip and slander. Those two that are the great look the other way sins of suburban Christian America. Gossip and slander, those aren't nearly as bad as alcoholism and adultery. Even though throughout the New Testament, those things are included in the same lists of sins. They're in the same lists, but those, we just don't like to talk about those. The power of words to harm, to do good, the power of words, the value of encouragement, and in a more general sense, it speaks often about excellent speech and about foolish speech. This is hard stuff. Words, words, words. We use them every day. We use them in all kinds of contexts, relationships, and Proverbs recognizes that the wise life and the foolish life, in so many ways, maybe they're not created by these things, but they're illustrated by them. As Jesus would say, it's not what goes into a person's mouth that makes him unclean, but rather it's illustrated as what comes out of a person's mouth. Because what comes out of a person's mouth is what? The contents of their heart. The contents of their heart is what comes back out. And what he's speaking of is not what you eat or what you drink, which we argue a lot about in our Christian society today and in Baptist life today. Jesus says it's not so much about that, but rather words, words, words. What comes out that we ought to give so much more attention to. And so Proverbs recognizes that this is an important subject. It doesn't talk about communication more than sexuality, more than money, more than, anger and emotions. It doesn't talk more about this than those other things just because. It talks about them more because it recognizes how important this subject is and how difficult it is for us. Whether we live 3,000 years ago in the time of King Solomon or whether we live today, the more things change, right? The more they stay the same. The more things change, the more they stay the same. So what I wanted to do is just, over 100 references, we're not going to look at even a tenth of those. But I did want to sample a few proverbs that speak about foolish speech and then sample a few that talk about wise speech. And then 2 points this morning that we'll wrap up with about balance and then some conversation. So that's the roadmap for you if you'd like to follow along. These will be on the screen as we jump around Proverbs if you'd just like to follow along there. Beginning in Proverbs chapter 10, we're going to begin with some of the more foolish types of speech or references. Proverbs 10:14 says, "The wise store up knowledge, The image being like you have barns, like you're storing up grain or food. The wise store up knowledge, but the mouth of a fool invites ruin. That's a picture you've probably seen in your life, right? The mouth of a fool that invites a fight, that invites a firing at work, that invites an argument at home, that just constantly invites ruin. The mouth of a fool invites ruin. I don't know that I've ever seen a fight or seen, I mean, an argument by its very nature that wasn't started by careless words. Careless words. Same chapter, verse 19 says, sin is not ended by multiplying words, but the prudent hold their tongues. Abundance and scarcity. In most commodities in life, abundance is seen as good, scarcity is seen as bad. Money, food, friends, children even. Abundance, good, scarcity, bad. With one exception. Proverbs would say the one exception is this one. An abundance of words does not end sin. In fact, it can compound it. But sometimes the prudent just choose not to speak. I probably have had more moments where I said something and then 5-10 minutes later, a couple hours later, I thought, you know, I wish I hadn't have. I've had more of those moments than those little moments of victory where before something comes out of my mouth, my brain, it's like a switch flips and it says, you know, you probably shouldn't say that. And the circumstance is not going to change one way or the other, whether you do or don't. So just don't. I have some of those moments and pat myself on the back when I do. I wish they were more frequent, but that's a good discipline to develop. It's a good discipline to develop. Chapter 14, verse 23, all hard work brings a profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. Here it's paralleling hard work with the person who just talks a big game but doesn't do anything. Empty talk, mere talk is what it's referring to, a different kind of foolish speech. Chapter 15, verse 28, the heart of the righteous weighs its answers, but the mouth of the wicked gushes evil. There is a difference. Being in Texas, you should get this, a difference in going to the grocery store and picking out the apples that you want or the oranges that you want and putting them in a bag and having them weighed. It's slow, it's methodical, it's caregiving versus, man, they hit a gusher and all of a sudden oil is going everywhere. Or perhaps you're driving through your neighborhood and the fire department is using this day to kind of purge the fire hydrants, or maybe a busted water line and you drive by and you just see water shooting everywhere. Very different picture. For a small proverb, it gives a lot of imagery here. The heart of the righteous weighs its answers with care, but the mouth of the wicked spews, gushes, vomits evil. Chapter 18, verse 13, to answer before listening, that is folly and shame. We're going to come back to the fine art of listening and giving a care later on. If you want to engage in conversation of substance, you have to really care, which means that you have to listen. In so many conversations that we have in our society today, it's just two people and they're just waiting patiently until it's their turn to talk. And they're tolerating you talking about yourself until it's their turn to talk about themselves. Yeah, a little kind of uncomfortable chuckles because we see it. We know that it's true. To answer before listening says, I don't care about understanding you. I don't care about knowing you. I just care about giving you my opinion. I care about telling you what I think. That's a hard proverb. That's a necessary proverb. To answer before listening, that is folly and shame. Chapter 29, a couple of verses here. Verse 11, fools give full vent to their rage, but the wise bring calm in the end. That's a good word about anger and the ability for words to escalate emotions. And then one more in chapter 29, verse 20. Do you see someone who speaks in haste? There is more hope for a fool than for them. In Proverbs, that's fighting words. A fool is like bottom of the barrel. It says there's more hope for a fool than for the person who speaks hastily. Proverbs has a lot to say about foolish speech, about lying, about gossip, about slander, about discretion, about carelessness, about anger. It has lots to say about these things. And that could warrant just kind of an own personal study if you want. It's very easy to find. Just, you know, you can Google search, find a website, just use your Bible browser, or, I mean, heaven forbid, you just pick up Proverbs and start reading it with a pencil and highlight and underline words. Novel idea. But it has lots to say about this. The beauty part is we read these things and we recognize, there are things that we know. We know this. They're just hard to practice. We know we should get more exercise. It's just hard to do. We know we should eat better. It's just hard to do. We know we should be more careful with our words. It's just hard to do. And look, the nice thing about these subjects is they're almost universal. Who doesn't have a hard time with this? Not I. I can only speak for me, but it's not me. And so they're poignant conversations. In other words, we shouldn't feel guilty about saying, yes, I have a hard time with this, because we all do, all right? Here's some Proverbs about wisdom, careful speech. And you see, even in those previous ones, some parallel that speak about both at times. Back to chapter 10, verse 13. Wisdom is found on the lips of the discerning, but a rod is for the back of one who has no sense. Wisdom on the lips of the discerning. In other words, a wise heart is exemplified through wise words, careful words. Chapter 12, verse 18, the words of the reckless pierce like swords. This is the power of words we mentioned earlier. The words of the reckless pierce like swords. Any of you felt like you've been wounded by the words of a close friend, family member? But sometimes we don't give equal consideration to the fact that the tongue of the wise brings healing. Encouraging words, soft words, words of mercy and compassion that we talked about last week can bring healing to people. Chapter 16, verse 23 and 24. The hearts of the wise make their mouths prudent, and their lips promote instruction. Gracious words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. It's a good picture too. Now, we don't do much. Oh, what's the word for beekeeping? Somebody help me out. It's an apiary is where it is. I don't know. I'll have to go look it up. Beekeeping. We'll just go with that. We do like honey in many cases in our culture, but just how sweet it can be, how nourishing it can be, how healthy it can be for us, that words have the same value. Chapter 20, verse 15, a couple of more. Gold there is, and rubies in abundance, but lips that speak knowledge are a rare jewel. I love that it compares this discipline as being more valuable and more rare than gold and rubies. Yeah, there's lots of gold, plenty of rubies, but this trait, not so much. Not so much. It's hard. And finally, chapter 22, verse 17 and 18 says, pay attention and turn your ear to the sayings of the wise. Apply your heart to what I teach. In other words, not only in the context of speaking, but in the context of listening, whose voices do we give place of authority and influence in our lives? It's pleasing when you keep them in your heart and have all of them ready on your lips. Just some examples. Maybe two or three of those will catch your attention. Hang on to them, take them, and meditate on them throughout the week as you consider the subject. A couple of points as I shared with you this morning. The first one is pretty obvious. Fruitful speech is a discipline at which we must work. It's a discipline. Nobody comes by it naturally. It's not a personality. All of our personalities, different personalities, might lean us towards some of these foolish speeches as opposed to others, but we all lean to some of them. So our personalities might give us better tendencies in some of the strengths, but not in all of them. It requires work. It requires attentiveness and practice. I was out playing catch with Sam yesterday, and he's throwing a baseball and really working at making the baseball go where he wants it to go. And I told him, I said, you know, it's amazing how many kids throw baseballs and they don't really look at where they're throwing it. They just kind of have a general idea, you know, this section, I'm going to throw the ball in this section somewhere. And they just kind of wind up and throw it. I said, it's a simple thing, but you have to train yourself when you're throwing to look where you want the ball to go, step towards where you want the ball to go. I said, having your body aimed in that direction and having your eyes pointing there matters so much. But in a lot of cases, it's just kind of, maybe we're looking at the clouds and throwing the baseball, or we step one way or the other. With communication, guys, it's the same way. It just requires, we taught the things that we do most often, we do without thinking, because we do it all the time. We eat every day. We dress every day. We brush our teeth every day. It's easy to do those things without even thinking about it. And then you go to the dentist and they say, man, you're missing some spots. Well, I brush my teeth every day, but I really don't think about it when I'm doing it. The things we do every day, and we talk more than anything. And so it's so easy to not give it consideration. It is a discipline. It requires work. The discipline of developing fruitful speech as opposed to harmful speech can be, will be, a lifelong struggle. And still, the fruits of the Spirit, the evidence of God in our lives, is not only seen in our actions, but in our words. In other words, as we grow in our life in love, if we are growing in love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control, if we're growing even in small increments in these qualities, our speech will be becoming more loving, more gentle, more peaceful, more patient, more self-controlled. My measure of evaluation is not you. Your measure of evaluation should not be me. My measure of evaluation is not some saint, you know, some writer, some other preacher, some figure of historical significance. My measure of evaluation should be me a year ago. Me 10 years ago. Me 6 months ago. Do I see evidence of the fruits of the Spirit, the evidence of God in my life, manifested in the way that I communicate with other people? Is my speech becoming more loving, gentle, kind, gracious, patient, peace-giving, self-controlled? It's hard work. It's a discipline. And we ought to strive towards fostering that together. You'll notice on this first point, I didn't use the word balance. Because balance, Proverbs is not advocating a balance between good speech and bad speech. Right? It's not saying if you only gossip and lie less than you encourage and lift up, then you're okay. It's not advocating a balance between good speech and bad speech. And so this is an important topic, but it's not one that we have failed to speak of in the past. We've talked about this often. Unique to this series and this go-round, what really struck out in my mind was how the balance sometimes has to exist between different types of positive speech. All right? That's the second point. The balancing act lies between types of positive. In other words, it's not advocating balance between positive and negative here, but that there's lots of different kinds of positive speech, and we need to have a balance. So next slide. Here's where I'm going with this. Families and churches today, in my observation, and I think many of you would agree, maybe all of you would agree, we're afflicted with its imbalance, where the kind of positive speech that is substantial, life-giving, transformational, endearing, characterized by depth, these kinds of conversations are really out of kilter with the kinds of conversations that are more casual, small talk, simple talk. This is not to say that small talk, casual talk is a bad thing. It's not. There are times whenever you have 2 minutes to say hello and pleasantries and greetings, and then you're on about your business. There's nothing wrong with that. If you go next slide, some of that we talk about most, conversation about the weather, about sports, about your yard, about your dog, about, you know, these little small talk kinds of things. Those are positive types of speech. They help us, you know, they help us connect, they help us feel warm and like a part of other people's lives. They recognize that, as Steve Johnson said earlier, not every conversation can be a 30-minute, 1 hour sit down and tell me about what's going on in your life. And so this is not a balance between a positive and a negative. What it identifies is that we in general become a society that just gravitates towards small talk because it's easier. And we have disproportionately included conversations of depth and significance instead of this. Look, I can talk with you about sports all day. And we can share lots of opinions and lots of thoughts, and we can break down, you know, what's happened to the Spurs, or we can break down what's going on with the Astros, or, you know, why the Rockets lost, and walk away, and I don't know that we know each other any better. It's still fun. You know, it's enjoyable, it's pleasant, it helps me, you know, feel connected to you, but I don't know that our relationship is any deeper or more connected by talking about that. I talk to you about music all day, and then seven more, and it's meaningful. It's something I love. It's part of creation. These are not bad things. These are good things. But I wonder if sometimes we get them out of balance. We need to seek out opportunities to invest in deeper conversations with people in our lives. This line of thought, it made me think about having a balanced diet. And so maybe you're familiar with, you know, back in elementary school, they give you the little pyramid or the pie chart that has, you know, different things in your diet that you need to include, things you need to eat. It's a fun little Google search is to search balanced diet chart and then see all the stuff that pulls up. This was one that I sympathized with. The different food groups are the fast food groups, frozen food groups, chocolate food groups, and caffeine food groups. I would probably put caffeine closer to the bottom. My wife would put chocolate at the bottom, and I can say that. She's not in here. She'll be here at 11, so I won't include that at 11 o'clock. I also resonated with this second one, a well-balanced diet, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and how you can make one pizza last all of those. The years that I was in college, the Burger King in our town, one day a week, they would sell Whoppers for 99 cents. And anytime you went, if you made a purchase, they'd give you a free soda if you had a student ID. And so that was part of our balanced diet every week, Whopper and a ginormous Dr. Pepper. And that would be dinner for us. Maybe two Whoppers if you were splurging. But the one that you're more familiar with would be this one. Rice and alternatives, grains at the bottom, fruit and vegetables in the middle, meat and alternatives above that, fats, oils, sugar, and salt above that. And there is no perfect one. With all the designer diets that might have the whole pyramid with no carbs, so you get no rice and alternatives, maybe the whole pyramid is fruits and vegetables. But when you think about conversation, there's a lot of conversation we do that's kind of that top little fats and oils and sugar and salt. It's cotton candy. It's chocolate cake. It makes life sweet. There's nothing wrong with talking about your yard, talking about gardening, talking about your hobbies, talking about golf, talking about what you watched on TV the other night, if you're watching the show together. Those things make life sweet. I love that. But if that makes up the entire pyramid of our relationship world, of our communication level, then this is a good day and a good time for us to reconsider balance on this. Reconsider balance. Is there substance to our communication? It's always awkward to stand up and talk about subjects that I'm not necessarily good at. Here's another point I'll share with you, and maybe we'll put the 11 o'clock sermon up on the podcast instead of this one. But look, it's I have a transparency problem. This is an issue for me. I spend so much of my work life having these substantive, deep, heavy conversations with people that's a part of our church and people that are part of my community. When I go home, I don't like having them. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. And sometimes my kids and my wife get the short end of the stick because this is where I live. And this is hard for me. It's hard to get up and talk about balancing conversation when it's not something I'm particularly good at. This is a convicting sermon for me to preach, much as it may be for you to hear. But I want you to know that's the purpose of these conversations, is for God's word and listening through his word to see where some of these things challenge us to make some changes. It would be unfortunate for me to talk about this and not give you some tips. And these are not biblical, this is not Bible advice. This is just, you know, Steve wrestling through this on his own. All right. The first thing I can tell you is that to have substantial conversation requires time. You're not going to have these conversations, in my case, usually less than an hour. And so it requires some planning. It requires scheduling a coffee or a breakfast or lunch with somebody. And then when you go, having a plan. I see Katie's here today. Katie's husband, Robert, was one of my favorites, because Robert King would call me, and we'd go to lunch, and we would small talk for about 10 or 15 minutes, and then he would pull out his agenda for our lunch. These are the topics that he really wanted to cover. And as unique as that is, it illustrates the point perfectly. And there's something admirable about saying, what are some topics of substance that I'm not talking about with my kids? What are some topics of importance that my spouse and I are not talking about, or we haven't visited about in far too long? I've got a friend, or I've got coworkers in my life. What are topics of significance that we're not talking about? Because if we don't pause, just like in going into a meeting or going on vacation, if you don't take a little bit of time to think about, how do I really want this to be valuable and significant? If you don't think about that beforehand, it's not probably just going to magically come to you whenever you sit down and order, you know, pancakes at IHOP. It requires a little bit of planning, and it requires some scheduling. I think in our busy society, and that may mean with friends or coworkers, lunch or breakfast, it means from time to time taking your wife out to dinner, just the two of you. And while you have friends and you go out with friends a lot, sometimes leave the friends at home and just go out with the two of you and talk about things of substance so that you're connected more. It means doing that with your kids. Planning and scheduling are good things. That's some areas of advice that I would pass along. A second thing that I've noticed is what I talked about listening earlier, that we really, in those conversations, we really care less about the other person. We care more about making our voice heard. We want to be known more than we want to know. Two things are required for these kinds of substantive conversations to take place. One of them is that you give a care about the other person, that you really want to know them. And the second thing is that they trust you enough to open up and share with you. And that trust sometimes comes with the lighter stuff, small talk and time and getting to know family, but that they trust you enough to open up and share with you what's going on. I can't control whether you trust me or not. I can work on that. But I can control whether I care, whether I want to listen. When I go into a conversation, especially when it pertains to theology or work, it's very easy for me to have my agenda set before I go in. Here's what I want you to hear. Here's what I want you to know. Here's what I want you to get from me. But it's a totally different dynamic when I go into a conversation and I say, man, there's nothing I have that I want to say. Really, what I want to do is learn as much about you as I can. And so I ask questions. You want to know how to get to know somebody better? Ask good questions and then listen. What is it in your life that really brings you joy? That's a good question to ask. Talk to me about what really makes you happy. What is it in your life that keeps you up at night? When you can't sleep, what is it? Tell me about those things. What are your thoughts on this particular issue? And then instead of listening for where I agree or disagree, I really try to understand where you're coming from. And I may agree, or I may not. But how did you get here? Because chances are your perspective has come from years and years of family and friendships and experiences. What are your thoughts about church? That's a dangerous question to ask, especially for me. What are your thoughts about church? What helped form those thoughts? Where do you think those have come from? What are your experiences with church? What are your thoughts about God? Asking good questions. You notice all those questions come out of a place that says, I really care about you. I want to know about you. I want to learn about you more than I want to tell you stuff. Listening and caring, I think, is another tip that I can give you. Another observation is, in the context of church life, sometimes we can have these thinner, sweeter, cotton candy conversations, even about church stuff. We like to talk about the Bible and theology and the Bible and theology and church theory and what we're doing up here. It's a different conversation to say, what does the Bible say? Or what does the Bible say to you? Yeah. What is the Bible telling us versus what do we need to do? What do you need to do? What do I need to do in light of this story, in light of this conversation? Those are different conversations. It's very easy to just talk. The Bible says this and this, and we can argue theology and argue interpretation and go all over, and none of it has to affect the way we live. None of it has to affect the way we encounter God. There's a little deeper level there that all of a sudden makes the Bible personal, makes our theology personal. These are just some thoughts, some ideas. You know, as you think about how to practice this, how to take some steps in this, I offer these two questions. The first one is, who are the people in your life that warrant some effort at deepening your communication? You know, the one thing I dislike about my job more than anything else is that there are so many of you and so few hours in my day. I wish that three or four times a year, you and I, every one of you, could sit down over coffee and spend an hour just talking about life, about your faith, about what God is doing, about your fears. A, I don't have enough time, and B, man, I do pretty good remembering names and stories and stuff, but I'm not that good to remember everything. You guys are really gracious in a lot of cases with me. But I wish I did. I love you all enough that I want to be able to do that. The reality is I don't have that time, but collectively we all do. We all do have that time to share with a group of other people. That's what a church should be. Aaron did a beautiful job communicating that in the welcome this morning. that you shouldn't have to be me, but that we ought to be able to do that for one another in some capacity. If you're going to have these kinds of conversations and substance with people in your life, it's not going to be 100 of them. It's not going to be 500 of them or 1,000 of them. It's going to be 10 or 20, maybe 30. It's going to be a smaller group. And your level of friendship is just going to have concentric circles. Who are the people in your life that warrant deeper, more substantive communication that you're not being intentional about fostering that? That's a good question. I want you to think about it. And then secondly, the follow-up to that is, what's one step this week? Let's not put it off until we get the next week's conversation about humility and leadership, and then we don't have to worry about this anymore. It'll pass. It's like a virus or a flu. Oh, he talked about that. We get to next week, and we'll have a different issue. What's a step you can take this week to invest in a conversation of substance with one of those people? That means going into the conversation, maybe you sit down and say, here's a list of topics that I want to know more about this person, or I want to talk about with this person. I want to develop some understanding with them. And in this conversation, we're just going to small talk, but we're going to cover one of these. I'm going to initiate us spending time talking about one of these. Who are those people? And what's one thing you can do this week? You know what? You guys know, God created in the image of God, a big part of that for us is having meaningful, valuable relationships with other people in our life. And this is one of those places where busyness, that first conversation we had, work versus quality time, busyness can inhibit the depth of meaningful relationship we have with other people that God has designed us to have. And if busyness is a threat, then the cure to busyness is prioritizing with just a little bit of planning and just a little bit of putting something on the schedule. And then initiating conversation of substance. I think it's a good thing. I hope that you'll work towards achieving balance in your life on this subject. Okay?